My guest, Reeve Lindberg, is the youngest child of Charles and Anne Morrow Lindberg. She was born in 1945. Reeve says she's very pleased with Scott Berg's new biography of her father. She approved the decision to grant Berg access to her father's papers. She thought the time was right to tell her father's story and that Berg was the person to do it. In her new memoir, she tells what it was like to grow up in the Lindberg family. Her book is titled Under a Wing. Reeve Lindberg is also the author of children's books and two novels. The new biography of her father says that the Lindberg children learned in school or through friends about the kidnap and murder of their brother. I asked her how she found out.
I think I found out in a school, it's either in a newsreel at school or maybe even it was through one of those Life magazine retrospective photograph series. And then if I asked questions to my mother, she would talk a little bit about it. I did not even try to ask my father. It seemed like something I shouldn't ask him about.
What signal did he give you that gave you that impression?
He seemed closed on the past. He did not seem to be somebody who could easily talk about the past. And I think it was much more an understood feeling among us that you just didn't ask him than any signal that he gave directly. For me, anyway, it just was something that I knew from earliest childhood. You just don't ask him.
Do you remember what your reaction was when you found out about the kidnapping?
Yeah, I thought I felt very strange. It was almost like a numbing experience, and that still happens. I'll read a reference to the kidnapping in a book. I just did a book I was asked to review, and I can feel it. I just kind of go numb. I don't know why that is. I wonder whether it's some kind of defense against emotion, but it doesn't feel real.
Were you angry with your parents for not telling you themselves?
Oh, no. No, I wasn't. I think I understood it immediately as terribly, terribly painful. And no, I wasn't angry about that, ever.
You write that for years, people would show up at the door of your family's home claiming to be the grown version of the baby who was kidnapped. Did you ever believe any of them, that any of them really was your long-lost brother?
Oh, no, I never believed it. Actually, I think it only happened maybe twice, and each time it seemed very strange, but I never doubted ever that the baby had died. There was probably because in our family that was the strongest sense that we had lost a brother. There was a death in the family, and that had really overshadowed the family in certain ways.
Your first baby, you write about this in your memoir, your first baby died at the same age that your brother did, just before reaching his second birthday.
Yeah, it was my first son. My daughters were born, but it was my first little boy.
Mm-hmm. And that was a seizure from encephalitis?
That's right.
Yeah. In the middle of the night while you were sleeping?
Yes, I was sleeping at my mother's house, and he was too, yeah.
And you write how your mother told you to spend some time just sitting with your baby's body.
Yeah.
Why did she suggest that?
I think she must have wished that she could have done it herself. And when her child died, he was, of course, lost for several months before they found the body. And it had been buried in a very shallow grave and in the woods. And there had been animals. And it was not something that she ever saw, that body. So she missed having just the chance to mourn, to be with the child's body. And she told me that I should do that, that it would be important for me to do that. And she sat with me. It was an amazing moment.
It must have made you feel that, babies are just so vulnerable that there's only a certain amount you can do to protect
yes.
a child.
Yes, there it did. And for when my second son was born, it was very hard for me sometimes in the morning to go and check on him because I had found the first one dead unexpectedly. And I do think this happens to people who have lost their children, is that it's so hard not to overprotect and to behave normally toward the next one.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, you try to keep that impulse in check as a mother yourself. Were you overprotected as a child by your parents?
I don't know. I guess my brothers and my sister said I was spoiled, so I don't know whether that means overprotected or not, but they were pretty much kidding. I think we were certainly very much protected in terms of our surroundings, yes. My father was very, very careful about where we lived and how we lived and who came to the door, and we always had a German Shepherd, they're a little intimidating for people coming up out of the blue to visit. We were pretty well protected, but we also went to public schools, and we were encouraged to ride our bikes and make our friends and run around the neighborhood with everybody else. So I guess the answer would be yes and no.
So do you like to fly?
I used to. I flew with him, and I loved it, but although it was a little noisy. And but I haven't flown as a pilot. I never got a pilot's license. I fly like everybody else, like a commuter, the way we all do. But I loved flying with him early on. Even in the days that I was flying with him, you felt his sense of freedom.
Could you describe a little for us one of those early flights with your father?
Oh, well, the one I wrote about was when we were, every Saturday, or almost... And maybe it wasn't even every Saturday. It felt like every Saturday that he was home, he would take us flying out of Danbury, Connecticut. There was a little airport there, and he would take us up, each of us, one at a time, and he would give us some flying instruction. But he also, you could tell, he just kind of wanted to give us the feel of what it was like to be up there in the air. And sometimes he would just have fun. You know, he would climb way up with the airplane and then dive, and he would feel the weightlessness, or he would... He'd just kind of go low and show you all the little roads in the cars. And then once the automatic choke malfunctioned, and we had to put down in a cow pasture. And I had no clue what was happening. I wrote about this, but he said, we have to land because we can't get to the airport in time. And I thought, gee, in time for what? I had no sense of danger at all.
Oh, that's just as well.
It was wild. It was just wild. And then he just said, well, you put your head down now. So I did it. And then and I said, are we going to crash? You know, I got all excited, but it wasn't fear, really. I just thought it was an adventure. I don't know what I was thinking, but he got us down in this field, and we bumped along, and, you know, we didn't hit any stones or trees, and we didn't hit any cows, and we did fine. And then we, you know, got out, and off we went. But he said it was one of the most dangerous forced landings he had, but I, of course, had no notion. I was about 7 years old, and I just thought we were having a good time.
One of the things about your father that Scott Berg brings up in his biography is the period around World War II when your father, for a period, supported Hitler before the revelations about the concentration camps, but he never withdrew some of that support. He never spoke out against Hitler after that and seemed to consider Jews the other, so to speak. And I'm wondering if that was new to you, if you were aware of that.
Well, it was new to me. My father always claimed that he didn't at all support Hitler, that he admired the German people, and he was an isolationist. He didn't want the U.S. going into war at that time, and of course there were many, many other isolationists. But he did make that Des Moines speech in which, to me, there were three paragraphs that sounded anti-Semitic, and there are those, I still get letters from people who say, no, you're judging him harshly, it wasn't anti-Semitic, it was just the isolationist position, and I try to understand that, but to me it's very, very hard, having been born after the war, to read that and not feel the anti-Semitic implications of that kind of language.
It must be so strange for you, you know, to have, at the same time as your memoir has come out, this massive biography about your father, and I'm wondering if you have this instinct to be protective of his image or to just be as kind of fair about it as you can, to just, you know, try to learn the truth as a, you know, the good and the bad in the middle, as opposed to just kind of, you know, preserving the image.
Oh, yeah. No, I do. I'm much more interested in both the truth and in the humanity of my family than in any kind of image. I'm not too crazy about images. I think somebody said that image is death. And I think you lose humanity in image. And my sense is that Scott also was trying to get behind, very much trying to get behind the image and into the story of this man and what happened to him. And I think he's done a really beautiful job. It's a different view. Our views are different a little bit, but not, I think, conflicting. It's funny. It's almost as though I'm looking at him from the inside and Scott is looking at him from the outside, and together you have this picture, and I think it's accurate. It's not always exactly the same, but I think we're both accurate in our views.
What are some of the things that you see from the inside?
Well, I saw he was much, much more relaxed with me, I think, than he ever would be, would appear to be in a more public context. He was able a little bit to just kind of relax and lay back and have a good time at home more than one felt he could outside of the home. And one of my brothers was just talking to me about this, about how he would, you know, he came back from camp and he was on the train platform and he ran up to throw his arms around my father, and my father sort of turned to stone. He just, and Land realized, oh no, you don't do this in public, as though there was no possibility of displaying affection or you know, doing anything emotional where anybody could see you. Whereas at home, it seemed much less that way. He seemed much more willing to be affectionate and to be relaxed and so on than ever outside the home. It was as though there were two different emotional worlds for him.
Reeve Lindberg, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Terry. Appreciate it.
Reeve Lindberg's new memoir is called Under a Wing.